Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This morning we'll read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Prayers by Queen Kunti, Text 24. Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanad Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Kuchrata Mrde Mrde Neka Maharatas Kato Dron Yastratas Chasma Hare Virakshita. My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashvatthama. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The list of dangerous encounters is submitted herein. Devaki was once put into difficulty by her envious brother. Otherwise, she was well. But Kunti Devi and her sons were put into one difficulty after another for years and years together. They were put into trouble by Duryodhana and his party due to the kingdom. And each and every time, the sons of Kunti were saved by the Lord. Once, Bhima was administered poison in a cake. Once, they were put into the house made of shellac and set afire. And once, Draupadi was dragged out, and attempts were made to insult her by stripping her naked in the vicious assembly of the Kurus. The Lord saved Draupadi by supplying an immeasurable length of cloth, and Duryodhana's party failed to see her naked. Similarly, when they were exiled in the forest, Bhima had to fight with the man-eater demon, Hidimba Rakshasa, but the Lord saved him. So it was not finished there. After all these tribulations, there was the great battle of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna had to meet such great generals as Drona, Bhishma, and Karna, all powerful fighters. And at last, even when everything was done away with, there was the Brahmastra released by the son of Dronacharya to kill the child within the womb of Uttara. And so the Lord saved the only surviving descendant of the Kurus, Maharaj Parikshit. Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanad Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krichata Mrde Mrde Neka Maharatastrato Dron Yastratas Chasma Hare Virakshita. My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashvatthama. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Niravishesha Shunyavadi Paschityade Shatane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakalpa Churubhyas Jagripa Sindhu Vyevacha Vadidhanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So Queen Kunti is speaking, continuing her appreciation of Lord Krishna, who has helped her and her sons many times in many different ways, and very extraordinary things the Lord has done to help them overcome various very extraordinary situations. Very extraordinary. As we read yesterday, Devaki was, in one sense, not helped as much as Kunti. Devaki's sons were killed. Kunti's sons were saved every time. So there was some difference there in treatment. And Srila Prabhupada's analysis we read yesterday was that Devaki had more, you could say, material facility to protect her and comfort her and in general just provide a feeling of well-being and safety and so on. Because her husband, Vasudeva, was there. Kunti did not have that sort of support from her family members. Her husband had died. Then Bhishma, who was very close to the family at least, he turned against them, more or less. At least he stopped being so much for them, and he actually did join the other side and fought against them in the battle, at least the battle of Kurukshetra itself. So Kunti was much more on her own with her sons, the Pandavas, and Lord Krishna, because of that, gave her special treatment, gave her special mercy. And therefore yesterday we were encouraging that, not that we need to artificially create a situation in which we just make ourselves bereft of material shelters and material help and so on. we don't need to artificially do that. Rather, we should, in general, accept the position the Lord puts us in and try to serve Him from that position. But still, an important point is that we should at least not be too concerned about our material comforts and material well-being. And we should at least make a real effort to serve the Lord as suits Him. And not, certainly not simply as suits us. And if we try to serve the Lord as suits Him, He gives special mercy. He gives more mercy than for those who really make sure that they're in their comfort zones and everything is fine and they're taken care of materially, and then they do something for Krishna if they have time and so on like that. So yes. Here then, Queen Kunti is clarifying, elucidating, giving some specific examples of different situations that she had to face and her sons had to face and their immediate family had to face. Poison cake, if you're familiar with Mahabharata, you would know about that. Duryodhana poisoned a cake. And what did he do? I think Bhima ate the cake, was it? Was this to do with the snakes? Okay, anyway, there was a poison cake. And somehow Krishna saved them. I forget the exact details. Then the great fire. Well, that, yes, that's a very prominent event in the life of the Pandavas. Somehow or other, Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra gifted them a big palace. They couldn't understand. How come suddenly this very charitable mood and just giving us this big palace and, oh, so we can live comfortably? How nice of them. But could it be real? Or is there something going on behind the scenes? And the first thing they noticed when they moved into the palace was that it was not made of the usual materials. It was made of lac, which is highly inflammable, a highly inflammable substance. The cake, I know. Do any of you know the story of the cake? I think Bhima ate the cake, became poisoned, somehow or other ended up being thrown in the river, and the snakes bit him and counteracted the poison of the cake. Did I get it? Any Mahabharata experts here? Anyway, okay. Back to the house of Shelak. So the Pandavas, as soon as they moved in, they saw, oh, this is not made of bricks and cement and wood and marble and stone and other normal building materials. This is made of shellac. Why on earth would they give us a house made of shellac? It's just, it has never been done before, because you don't do it. So then, who was it? Vidura understood the situation and sent them a cryptic message. You remember that? Some special message to indirectly tell them that the house was going to be set alight and they were going to be killed. I forget the exact story. And that there was a tunnel underneath the house. I think Vidura told them that also. So sure enough, the house was set alight, but they were ready. And there were, what? Six other people, right? They were five men and one woman. And there was another group of five men and one woman who somehow ended up in the house. Have I got it? And the Pandavas, I think, killed them. The house burnt down. The bodies of five dead men and one dead woman were found, so burnt you couldn't recognize who they were. And so Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra and company thought, yes, it's the Pandavas and Queen Kunti, so now they're all finished, good. But they'd escaped in the tunnel by the help of Vidura, who had told them when it was going to happen and told them about the tunnel, but in some indirect way. Then what was it? Oh, the vicious assembly. Well, of course, that's the famous story of Draupadi. She was lost in the gambling match, and in order to just make the Pandavas feel bad, Dushasana, the second brother of Duryodhana, or second son really of Dhritarashtra, he decided to undress her in public just to show the Pandavas, see, you can't do anything because she's ours and we can do what we like with her. So he tried to do that, and she tried to resist, of course. Dushasana was trying to pull her sari away, She tried to hold on and resist, but she couldn't. In the end, she surrendered completely and just let go of the sari with both her hands, put her hands in the air and just called out, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda," and surrendered completely, and Krishna manifested as an endless sari, and Dushasana was just pulling and pulling and eventually became exhausted. And so you could say she defeated Dushasana, even though he's a big, powerful warrior and she's a woman. So we can learn from that, gentlemen or ladies. Well, yes, ladies. Don't let your husbands gamble. Okay. Because you never know where you'll end up. And, you know, ultimately it's not a joke, because there's one disciple of mine and her two daughters are disciples of mine, and the one son-in-law is also. And but the husband is a gambling addict. He has this condition. And he already lost one house. Lost. Gone. One house. A few motor cars. And from gambling. So anyway. So ladies, don't let your husbands gamble. Gentlemen, don't gamble. Okay? No gambling. And ladies, wear a sari. Okay? That's good advice. Wear a sari. Then there was the cannibals. Hidimba Rakshasa tried to kill Bhima. By Krishna's mercy, Bhima killed him. And then married the sister, Hidimbi. As a result, Ghatotkacha was born. Who was sort of, you know, if you looked at him, because his mother's a Rakshasa, big demon. If you look at him, he looks like a demon. But actually he had the heart of a devotee. So that's a long story, but it's interesting. If you ever visit Bali, I don't know if you're thinking of going to Bali, but it's quite a place. It is Hindu, a certain version of Hinduism, in many respects unrecognizable from what you know as Hinduism. But one thing they're into is Mahabharata and Ramayana, and making statues of the characters. So when you land in Bali, as you drive out of the airport, there's the approach road, and then you join the main road with all the traffic. So you come out from the airport on the approach road, there's a roundabout. It's a big roundabout. In the roundabout is the statue of Ghatotkacha. You've been there?
No,
I've seen it. You've seen a photo? Okay, yeah. Ghatotkacha attacking Karna from the sky. What a statue. I tell you, it's practically worth going to Bali just to see it. And then there are various other really amazing statues. Kumbhakarna, giant Kumbhakarna, being attacked by the monkeys. Wow. Unbelievable. Truly, just magnificent, beautifully done. And huge. This one of Ghatotkacha attacking Karna is massive. It may be as long as the room. It's so big. It's really big. And exquisitely done. So anyway. And then there was the Battle of Kurukshetra. And we mentioned yesterday there was that particular incident where Kunti requested, Krishna, please protect my sons. He agreed. And sure enough, they emerged from the battle alive and unscathed, despite the fact that literally 99.999 or something percent of the people did not survive. So Queen Kunti is appreciating. And then now, what has happened right now is that after the battle, Ashvatthama sent a Brahmastra to kill Parikshit within the womb of Uttara. He was to be the next following king, but Krishna saved Maharaj Parikshit. And Kunti's including that. So, just see, the Lord helps his devotees and protects his devotees. And, of course, we need to cultivate the eyes to see that, rather than maintain the eyes we already have. Those eyes see everything in terms of I, me, and mine. How I did this, how this was, some other thing was done by me, and all glories to me, and so many things are mine, and various things which aren't mine should be, and I will do what I can to make them mine. So, we need to cultivate then these eyes of seeing things in terms of how Krishna's helping, how I got some mercy, rather than just how I did this, how this was some luck or something. Srila Prabhupada made the point that whatever, practically whatever you can think of exists. If you can think of it, at least somewhere it exists, more or less. Prabhupada said, except luck. Well, two things. Luck and void. There is no such thing as luck. It doesn't exist. And there is no void for the Buddhists and people of that sort. So there is no such thing as luck. For the Karanis, there is karma. For the devotees, there is Krishna's mercy. You may have heard the famous story. Well, I don't know how famous it is really, but there was one man working on his roof on, you know, fairly large building like this. So he's up on the roof and it's one of these pitched roofs, like a V, upside down V. There he is banging away, doing some fixing of the roof. Suddenly he slipped and started sliding down the roof. He's going to go off the edge. And can you imagine? It would really hurt you. Really hurt you. So he realized, you know, this is an extremely serious situation. So he called out, God help! And went over the edge. As he went over the edge, lo and behold, there was some big nail or big something sticking out, and his clothes got caught on that big, shall we say, nail, and now he's hanging there, and he managed to pull himself back up, and you know, he didn't get hurt. And as he pulled himself up, he thought to himself, "Phew, I'm really glad I put that big nail there." This is famous joke. Yeah. So we have to cultivate that vision. We have to cultivate that vision. It's very important. Because actually it's a fact. whatever happens in our life, particularly good things and bad things, Krishna's hand is there. That is the reality. And we should learn to see that, at least learn to accept it, and gradually more and more we'll come to see how it is actually true. And this is all part of becoming Krishna conscious. Krishna conscious, after all, the term means to become conscious of Krishna. It is not Krishna belief. It is Krishna conscious. And believing something without actually knowing, and being conscious of something as an objective reality, these are totally different phenomena. So yes, Kunti is very conscious, therefore of Krishna. Therefore she is attributing all these things to Krishna. And for example, just as an example, in that Shelak house, of course it was Vidura who informed them. It was. But she's attributing it to Krishna. So, not exactly that she's just overlooking Vidura. You know, he was just like manipulated by Krishna. And so really it was Krishna and it wasn't Vidura. He just sort of functioned in a robotic way. Press the button and things happen. So not really that she thinks like that, but she knows that because he's a devotee and because he's inspired by Krishna through the heart, therefore he did like this. So ultimately, you know, not that we discount Vidura, that, you know, like he didn't do anything, but ultimately it's Krishna's mercy. Achintyaved abhed tattva. So we should try and cultivate these types of perspectives on the different happenings in our lives. It's a very important part of developing Krishna consciousness, developing the ability or the eyes to see the hand of Krishna. Because Krishna, in many ways, is behind the scenes. But we are seeing the scenes. And Krishna is behind the scenes. As we know, in Bhagavad Gita, what does Lord Krishna say? Mata paratiram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya mai sarvam idam protam sutre mani gana iva. There is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. It's a very good example. We are probably all wearing, if not some pearls, at least our neck beads. Our neck beads are suspended on thread. And if any of you are, what did they say? Bonbon riche. Yeah. Bien bien. Oh, bien bien. Bien bien riche. Maybe you actually have pearls. I just have tulsi. But it's much more valuable than all the pearls, actually. So, the thing is, you look at it, you can't see the thread. Can't see the thread. But it is the thread which is holding them. It is not the pearls which are, or the beads which are holding themselves. So this material world, Krishna is behind everything. But we don't see Krishna behind everything. The modes of nature and the laws of karma and how everything is working. Krishna is making it work. We just see the external manifestations. And therefore we think that this material world has, you could say, a life of its own. But it has no life of its own. It is resting on Krishna. And when Krishna withdraws at the end of the creation, this whole material world collapses and goes back to an elemental state. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And even your bien, bien maison in Flac, or what's it, La Flora? La Flora, or where do you live?
Yeah.
Or Flac, okay, your Flac. Or Comp Etier, whatever. Your nice, bon, bon, bien bon maison. Au revoir, maison. It'll be smashed. Yes, so when we look at the beads, we must understand it is not the beads which are holding themselves there by some potency of their own. This material world, it is not the matter which is holding all the different things together. It is Krishna behind the scenes. So devotee means a person who can see through the external covering to see what is really there, which is making things work behind the scenes, that is Krishna. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Question? Maintenant? Aujourd'hui? Non? Anyone? Question? Prashna? Oh, okay. Please. Correct.
But what happens today
when the wife, the husband is not
the husband is supposed to be a devotee, but he is also trying to earn money by some other means, not really Krishna consciousness?
Oh, I see.
What happens to the wife?
Oh, what happens to the wife? Yeah. They may be implicated to some degree. Of course, it's material, as opposed to with Krishna consciousness, it's spiritual. But still, if they, for example, are dependent on that money, and they are living comfortably on that money, which is coming by some wrong means, shall we say. Illegal or, you know, opposed to Krishna consciousness. Then they will have to take some, they'll definitely get some share because they are benefiting. And particularly if they know it, they could always tell him, no, you do something else. They could. Yeah. So yes, it works like that. They cannot just sit back and say, well, he's the husband. He has to provide money. How he does it is up to him. We're not forcing him to do something wrong. It's his choice. You cannot just say that. But having said that, interesting point. Any work in the material world has some fault. Just like I'll give you an example to illustrate the point. Some people invest, some devotees invest money in speculative investments. And some of them lose money as a result. You know, like these get rich quick things. But they end up losing their money. So Prabhupada, whenever he got money in ISKCON, he put it in the bank. In a bank account. Not in a sort of, you know, like a mutual fund or something, you know, stock exchange. He put the money in the bank. So that's, you know, acceptable for us. But still you must understand, the bank, they don't just keep your money in a, you know, in the safe, and when you come along and say, you know, I want my money, then just pull it out. You know, the same banknotes, the same numbers. No, they invest it. That's how come they can give you interest. And as I understand, the Muslims, the strictly Islamic banks, they actually just take your money and hold it. And they don't invest it in anything. Because, what does the bank invest it in? Generally, the stock exchange and these things. And some of your money is going to Phoenix breweries. It's a fact. But via the bank. So Prabhupada accepted it, even though it is not, you know, first class. But Prabhupada accepted it as being, you know, at least we can do it. Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes the point, every endeavor is covered by some degree of fault. You can hardly find anything pure in the material world. Like the milk we drink. The cows are abused. The general commercial cows, they're abused. And along with that, in many cases, they are fed even like meat products. It's very common for dairy cows to be fed fish meal. It's not unusual. Yeah. So, you know. But Prabhupada accepted and practiced putting money in the bank. And the bank invests it. So, you know, it's really the bank's problem, first at least. And it's not so much our problem. Okay? So any work you do, like you work in the hotel, or you work in the hospital, you work in the hospital, curing the sick people, and people think, oh, how nice, he's curing the sick people. So they can then, when they're cured, go back to their sinful activities very nicely. That's what you're doing. You are actually facilitating them going back to their sinful activities. If they stayed sick, then they wouldn't be able to do it so much. And the hotel, you know, whatever goes on in the hotel, there's plenty of nonsense. The meat. And in many hotels there's gambling. I don't know about here if they have casinos. But, you know, in so much intoxication, illicit sex life, etc., etc. So, in other words, if the husband is doing something illegal, it's not good, and it's dangerous, and he may get caught, or maybe just something against our principles. But, you know, someone who is working so-called honestly in some ordinary job, they cannot just get up and say, look at me, I'm free from any negative considerations, but look at him or her, you know, they're doing something wrong. It's a question of degree of wrong. But when the degree reaches a certain point, then for devotees they should stop. Like, I knew a devotee passed away. He had not a butchery, but a business selling not the meat, but the things like the brains and, you know, we will not say anymore, of the animals that are slaughtered. It's called, in English, it's called offal. Offal. The different bodily parts. And we'll just say absolutely no more whatsoever. And he was a devotee, chanting 16 rounds a day, and his wife. And his son went to our Gurukul in South Africa when we had one. And we tried and tried to get him out of the business. But he either couldn't or wouldn't. And then he died in a car accident. I think it was, or a heart attack. So, you know, for a devotee to actually work in that field, the devotees should not do that. Or like in a liquor store, own a liquor business or work in it, devotees shouldn't do it. If they, you know, do something else, work in some shop, like a clothing shop or jewelry shop or selling buildings or property or whatever it may be, that's acceptable enough. Even though you can't say it's just fine, because it's not just fine. There is contamination there for sure. Srila Prabhupada ki. Okay. Say to